This week on State Talk Africa, American voters cast their ballots on Tuesday in the race for the White House. Republican former President Donald Trump is next president of the United States.
America has given us an unprecedented and powerful mandate.
What is a Trump presidency expected to look like? How will that play out on the world stage? And how will it affect the African continent? Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from VOA headquarters in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Vincent McCorry. The American voters have spoken, and former President Donald Trump has been elected for a second term in the White House, defeating Democratic Vice President Kamala Harris. Trump is the first person convicted on multiple felony counts to be elected president. Let's go now to VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wida-Kuswara in Washington for more on an unprecedented election night. Patsy was at Howard University, where Vice President Kamala Harris was watching the results. Hello, Patsy.
Hi there, Vincent.
Yes, now let's begin with that. What was the reaction like as the results were streaming in? And of course, the trajectory was that Kamala Harris was lagging behind.
Yeah, so from the afternoon, people were starting to trickle in, and the mood was very light, very joyful. There was a lot of dancing, there was music and laughter. But then as the night progresses, as more and more states were called for Donald Trump on the giant jumbotron where people were watching, the mood began to change in the Kamala Harris headquarters. So around about 10 p.m., there was definitely a lot less laughter, a lot less dancing. People had this concerned look on their faces. And when just after midnight, the campaign co-chair, Cedric Richmond, came out and said that tomorrow is another day, basically. They're still counting the votes. They're making sure that every vote counts, every voice is heard, and that Kamala Harris won't be addressing her supporters at Howard University, but she will address them here at Howard University, he said, tomorrow, which is Wednesday. That's when the crowd started to disperse. That's just around about 12:30 after midnight.
Yes. Now, all the reports or the numbers as they were coming in also indicated that Vice President Kamala Harris wasn't doing as well or didn't perform as impressively in some of the, Democratic strongholds. Has there been any word from his camp maybe as to what this could be attributed to?
Well, it's too early to tell at this point, and so far we have not heard anything from the Harris campaign, including what time or even whether Vice President Harris will be addressing her supporters at the Howard University, where her election night watch party was held. So you are right to point out that Harris underperformed in many areas that she was expected to perform well in. We don't know yet about the gender divide, but that's going to take some time to look at. But basically, Donald Trump won pretty much all of the battleground states. And he also won quite well in terms of, keeping his support from the traditional male, the traditional Trump supporters. But I think he has also succeeded in expanding his base, particularly with minority voters. So, black males, Latino males, we have seen a surge of support for Donald Trump. So what this can be attributed to, I think there'll be time for the analysts to look into this and kind of figure out what happened there. But I think it is fascinating to note that Donald Trump has won the White House twice. The second time, even though he is a convicted felon and twice impeached during his first term. And on both those occasions, he won against a woman candidate. 2016 against Hillary Clinton, and then 2024 against Kamala Harris. I was at the Clinton campaign headquarters when she lost to Trump at that night. I think the level of shock and surprise was even bigger at that time in 2016. But there's definitely a lot of parallels there between what happened last night at the Kamala Harris headquarters and what happened in 2016 at the Javits Center, where Clinton held her election night watch party.
And, you know, for some of our viewers, they're always curious to see at what point there is a concession speech. But we have seen some kind of there's a history. Is it necessary? Is it always mandatory for somebody to come out and concede officially and make any speech? Or actually, they can skip that?
Well, it is an American tradition. It is an American tradition that Donald Trump himself overlooked when he lost to Joe Biden, but definitely it's part of American tradition, and it's also part of this essence of democracy that Americans hold in high regard, which is this peaceful transfer of power. Peaceful transfer of power cannot happen unless the other person says, yes, you win, and I will support you as the American president. So that tradition is important, and Harris herself has said before, she has committed to a peaceful transfer of power. She has committed to accept the election results. As far as the logistics as to when she would do this and in what forum, that hasn't been confirmed yet. But there's every expectation she will give remarks to the nation today, to her supporters. We are thinking that it is going to happen at Howard University because that is what her campaign co-chair, Cedric Richmond, said last night. But of course, nothing has been confirmed as of this point this morning.
Well, we'll wait to see. I know that some of our viewers really like to see somebody concede officially. Thank you very much, Betsy, for that report. Betsy is VOA White House bureau chief. Now let's go to the southern swing state of Georgia to VOA chief national correspondent Steve Herman. Hello, Steve. Hope you had some sleep.
Good morning from Lawrenceville, Georgia.
Thank you. We were very curious about how things are going to play out, especially in the swing states. Did things go according to expectations, or everything went the opposite direction?
I think they even exceeded Donald Trump's expectations. I saw a look on his face very similar to 2016 when he came out. It's like, can you believe that this really happened? Even his strongest backers and his team thought, okay, we'll sort of squeak by. The polls are very, very close. Although Trump, of course, publicly yesterday was saying that the numbers look good. And about that, he was exactly right. It certainly exceeded expectations. But as some of the pollsters are pointing out, there was that margin of error, you know, plus or minus 3%. So it was really around the margins. But what is really remarkable is essentially, you know, he has taken almost every one of the swing states. We're still waiting for the official results from Arizona and Nevada, the Sun Belt. But he lost Georgia, obviously, won Georgia. Kamala Harris lost Georgia. And the blue wall crumbled. Or disappeared. And maybe I don't think anybody's going to be talking about the blue wall for the Democrats 4 years from now or 8 years from now. Yeah.
Now, Steve, you know, this is a question I'll bring up again and again. The polls, they were predicting a really tight race. But when you look at how the numbers were coming in, as you say, the blue wall crumbled. So what does that tell us about polling?
Well, I think that we have seen consistently that the polling has underestimated Donald Trump's strength. In 2016, these were referred to as shy voters who did not want to tell pollsters that they were going to support Donald Trump. The Kamala Harris camp thought the opposite might happen this time, that there were women who were secretly going to support Trump, even though their husbands were adamant Trump supporters because of the reproductive rights issues and things like that. But I would say that the polling wasn't necessarily really off. I think we'll hear more from the pollsters in the days ahead defending, their surveys. Maybe there was some hurting that some of the outliers didn't want to be out there saying, oh, we think, you know, there's going to be a solid Donald Trump victory. Mm-hmm. But that's why we don't talk about who wins these elections until the votes are in, because time and time again, we can get very surprised by the actual results compared to the expectations.
And, you know, sometimes people get caught up in the rhetoric, but really when you go down to the real issues, the two candidates were articulating different issues. So would one say, from what you're hearing, that regardless of what we are hearing, regardless of some of the rhetoric, the issues that were more important to them counted when it came to them casting the ballot, and what were those?
Well, the number one issue was definitely the economy, concerns about inflation. The Biden administration kept saying, oh, you know, the actual numbers are looking pretty good, and we understand, we feel your pain. And so Kamala Harris, I think, got blamed for the high prices of eggs and milk and bread. And although I can tell you that gasoline here, where we're at, is under $3 a gallon. And I remember hearing analysts saying 6-8 months ago that if, at that time, Joe Biden was still the candidate, that if gasoline went to $4 a gallon, that Biden would definitely lose. So even though there has been some relief, it's not enough. And there's obviously more people in America who feel that Donald Trump is going to be a better choice than Kamala Harris for the pocketbook issues, these kitchen table issues.
Wow. Thank you very much, Steve, for that report. Steve Hammond, he's VOA Chief National Correspondent. Time now for a short break. We're discussing the U.S. presidential election. Use the hashtag VOA Elections or VOA Elections 2024 to follow election coverage by The Voice of America. When we return, we will continue our discussion on the on how the election results might affect the foreign policy of the United States. Stay with us.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
This year's U.S. election is the most important election with a global impact. And here at VOA Africa, we're dedicated to delivering to you the latest news.
VOAfrique.com pour une élection historique. Kamala Harris va faire face à
Donald Trump.
And Kamala Trump, waxay aad hadda ugu noqonayaan gobollada la isku xiray immigration
project. Esta é uma eleição histórica nos Estados Unidos.
National bill for Ungundumunzadi. Like the Electoral College.
From TV programs to radio broadcasts and digital coverage, VOA Africa has been delivering accurate news and information. So stay with us for continued coverage of this country's historic election.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in.
Back here with Straight Talk Africa. We're discussing the U.S. presidential election, where VOA is projecting Donald Trump the winner. Americans faced a stark choice between the two candidates who have drastically different visions for the future. Vice President Kamala Harris, the Democratic candidate, promised to work across the aisle to tackle the economy and lead the allies on the international front. Trump is vowing to follow his America First approach that might change the engagement of the U.S. with the world. With us to provide insight on the U.S. foreign policy toward Africa and beyond, we have with us via Zoom the director of the Africa program at the Wilson Center here in Washington, Oge Onubogu. And in studio with me is the Atlantic Council Fellow at the Africa Center, Ambassador J. Peter Pham. Ambassador Pham is also a former special envoy for the Sahel and Great Lakes region of Africa. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to State Talk Africa.
Thank you.
Now, if I may start with
you.
Yeah, thank you. You're welcome. If I may start with you, Ms. Onubogu, in terms of the foreign policy overall, you know, there are things that continue the way they are, but what are some of the issues, what are some of the areas we can expect to see a sort of a shift or an attempt to kind of reconfigure things at a time when we know there's a crisis in the Middle East, we have Ukraine war, and then, of course, we have situations in Africa.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Albert. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Ms. Onubogu.
Thank you very much, Vincent. And it's a pleasure to join you this morning for this show. I think going back to your question, when it comes to the Africa continent, as we know, Africa isn't necessarily a region that has featured over time on sort of a high priority list in terms of U.S. Foreign policy. But I think over the last couple of years, we've seen more of a shift to re-strategize and rethink our approach in how we engage with the continent. I think moving forward, it would be in our best interest as the U.S. to ensure that we strengthen and we deepen our Africa policy, ensuring that it is one
Which
that
one
is more coherent
okay.
as we see the changes on the continent, as we see that there are several other partners that are involved in forming ties with different countries on the continent. It's important that we deepen and strengthen and build a coherent U.S.-Africa policy, one that isn't only focused on sort of a competition with Russia or China or other powers, but realizing that beyond Russia and China, that there are other actors too as well that are involved and partnering with African countries. So really thinking about how we build a stronger, deeper and coherent Africa, U.S.-Africa policy would be important. One of the areas where we could do this is really in our work on trade policy, really thinking about how we engage in this space. When we think about sort of our AGOA, the African Growth and Opportunity Act, that is set to expire in 2025.
Yes.
Many have referred to.
Yeah, and we will actually go into AGOA and PEPFAR a little bit in a second. But I wanted to bring in Ambassador Pham. And of course, you can also kind of, if you want to kind of chime in on the results themselves, the fact that these results have, for some, really have been very astounding.
Well, I would say they're astounding for those who live in their own echo chamber.
Yeah.
I'm very delighted at the results, and I'm not surprised, because President Trump had a message which echoed with the American people quite clearly. He's become the first Republican in 20 years to not only win, we're still counting votes, the Electoral College, but also the popular vote, currently leading Vice President Harris by 5 million votes nationally. So I think the message of the economy, as the correspondent mentioned earlier, but also immigration, border security, national security, peace through strength, and not being rolled up. So all those things, I think, were powerful messages. And he built a new coalition. This is not your grandfather or even your father's Republican Party. The exit polling from number of pointed to a coalition that now includes groups that formerly were not part of the Republican coalition. So we're seeing a realignment also of U.S. domestic politics that will be important as an influence on our foreign policy.
Again, I'll go back to the question I ask almost everybody. Do you get a sense that the polling was kind of misleading, or is it that some people are shy to actually clearly state how they're going to vote when actually some issues were more important to them perhaps than even the rhetoric that we hear?
Again, I think your national correspondent hinted earlier that there might have been some herding among the pollsters. Yeah. And quite clearly, there was a bit of wishful thinking. There was that, you know, Kirk, the little bit of tempest in a teapot over the weekend about an alleged shift in Iowa where the president was, the former president was said to be down 4 points. Instead, he won the state by, you know, double digits. So I think there was a little bit of everyone trying to herd together and be with the group. And I think more than a little bit of wishful thinking. Mm-hmm. And it's quite clear, consistently, Trump supporters have been undercounted. And I think pollsters really, if they want to maintain any credibility, have to really revisit their models.
Yes. And just going back, and I'll come to you a bit also on the policy towards Africa. For those who are watching, for those who have a lot of interest in how the U.S. interacts with Africa, we know that at the moment, for example, Russia has kind of gotten so involved in the Sahel region. We have seen also, you know, of course, China is big on the continent. What can we expect to see more in terms of how to balance that, especially the interest of the African countries, the interest of the U.S., and also having to deal with a power like Russia that has a lot of interest, especially in the Sahel region?
Thank you very much for your question, Vincent. And I think going back to one of the points that I made earlier, it's about the importance of deepening our Africa strategy, building one that is coherent, that is also responsive and listens to the dynamics on the ground, domestic dynamics as things are changing in different countries, and also the regional dynamics too as well, ensuring that it's not just a policy or an approach that is meant to counter Russia or China, but understanding that there are other actors beyond Russia and China, Turkey, India, Iran, several other actors that are involved in different countries on the continent. So it would be to our own advantage as the U.S., as we think about our engagement with the continent, to ensure that our strategy is one that is coherent, is one that is clear, is one that seeks for partners that we can engage with effectively, partner countries that we can engage with effectively on the continent, and one that isn't only designed to sort of counter Russia and China, as there are several other powers involved in the space. And also, it is important that we take a step back and also listen to the way things are changing on the continent. Listen to what the people, citizens are saying. Dynamics are changing. So it's important that we have a policy that is not only informed by our interests as the U.S., but also informed by the desires and by the wishes of citizens, that listens, that is responsive to the changes that we see on the continent.
Thank you. And, you know, Ambassador Pham, I've known you for years, very passionate about the U.S. engagement with Africa. You have been a special envoy for the Sahel, the Great Lakes region. But as you heard Ms. Onubugu say, Africa, from some experts, Africa is never a top priority of American foreign policy, and it doesn't matter whether it's a Republican administration or Democratic administration. How would you respond to that as a person who has been actually envoy to African regions?
Well, I think what's important to understand is, and I would say this on any occasion, you've heard me say it, without Africa, the United States would have great difficulty achieving some of its own national goals. And if we are to win the future, if we are to reindustrialize, build up, we require critical minerals, access to them, which are produced in Africa. And there can be a win-win in this. Africa needs to gain the value added, needs to be able to benefit from its resources that it provides the world. And the United States needs access to it. So I think there's a partnership to be had there. And I fully agree with Oge. We need to listen, but listening goes both ways. And so I think what one thing that's going to be happening in a Trump administration is going to be reciprocity. It's not going to be one way. So, for example, trade. The Africa Growth and Opportunity Act is up for renewal, and I expect it will be renewed. But its conditions, and there are conditions to it, will be looked at, including that one of the conditions for eligibility is reforming the economy and opening the markets, but another is not undermining U.S. foreign policy interests or national security. And we have countries in Africa that benefit, including some of the ones that benefit most from AGOA. South Africa, for example, that never miss an opportunity to kick America in the teeth. And I think we have to question whether they are eligible under these criteria. And that's a question that's been raised not just by Republicans, but in the current Congress, by senior Democrats as well. Mm-hmm. So I do think that listening goes both ways. Now, one of the things about coherent Africa policy is also, and I fully agree with Oge, is listening, and that includes not hectoring. So a lot of the lectures and moralizing that has contributed to turning many countries in Africa away from the United States needs to be replaced by a more pragmatic approach that listens, looks at national interests on both sides, and balances it.
Ms. Onubugu, from what Ambassador Pham says, there's a need for those countries to conform to certain conditions, conditionality, certain requirement. Is that an unfair ask for them, for America?
Well, I think to the point about listening being on both sides, I agree with that point that and we have seen a lot of African countries, too, as well, stepping up at a better understanding and realizing that they, too, want to play a greater role on the global stage. So we will find allies in several countries that want to be part of the process, that want to ensure that there's a genuine partnership. And I think this is where when we come to the table as the U.S. and African countries that we might engage with, that we come to the table as equals. I think there might be a perception on both sides that one might be coming to the table with more than the other. But in this world today, and to the point that Peter made too as well, you know, the U.S. needs Africa. African countries also need the U.S. So it is important that when we do come to the table for conversations, for discussions, that we come as partners where one side or the other doesn't feel as if they're being taken advantage of. So I do agree that there should be listening on both sides, and that partnership should also be on equal terms.
Well, the time is working against us. We're really enjoying the conversation, but we have to leave it right here. Thank you both for the thought-provoking discussion. We appreciate your time. Oge Onubugu, Director of the Africa Program at the Wilson Center, and Ambassador J. Peter Pham, former Special Envoy for the Sahel and Great Lakes region of Africa. Thanks to our affiliate stations for broadcasting Straight Talk Africa across the continent. Now follow our coverage of the U.S. elections using the hashtags VOA Elections or VOA Elections 2024. I'll see you next time.